WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. George McGovern is tormented by questions about his daughter's death. Terry McGovern was a longtime alcoholic who'd been in and out of detox and treatment centers. In December of 1994, she blacked out in the snow and froze to death. She was 45 years old. George McGovern wonders why his daughter died like some deserted outcast when she had a loving family. He wonders if he and other members of the family made mistakes in the way they handled her illness. McGovern is a former U.S. senator from South Dakota. In 1972, he was the Democratic candidate for president. He lost to Nixon in a landslide. Now he heads the Middle East Council in Washington. His memoir, Terry, My Daughter's Life and Death Struggle with Alcoholism, has just been published in paperback. On this archive edition, we have an interview recorded last June when the book was first published.
Your daughter had been in and out of treatment centers for years, and every time it looked like she was making progress, she'd have a relapse. In the last few months of her life, under the advice of professionals, you and your wife had distanced yourself from her, a decision that you came to regret after her death. What was the thinking behind that advice?
Well, the counselor who told us to do that is an old friend of ours and a very good man. I don't criticize him for his judgment. It was his view that Eleanor and I had become so obsessed with Terry's illness that it was interfering with our own health and our own peace of mind. He also questioned whether it was the right course for Terry. His view was that if she was ever going to get well, she had to confront the desperate character of her illness, and he thought possibly that Eleanor and I were carrying too much of the burden and perhaps even enabling her to continue a very dangerous lifestyle. But acting under his advice, we did quit calling so much. We eased off on the letter writing. There were no visits during that period. I regret that now. I think any parent would. Obviously, the doctor who gave us that advice didn't know that Terry was going to die during that distancing period. Certainly, we didn't know that. If I could just pass on a word of advice to other people who have this dilemma about what to do with an alcoholic in the family, I think if you're going to follow that course of putting some distance between you and the alcoholic, you should accompany that by frequent calls, at least once a week, just to see how they're doing, to tell them you love them, that you're still with them, that anything you do, you're doing because you think it might be helpful to them. Alcoholics need that kind of love and support and reassurance.
One of the things that you did to try to help her is, for instance, when she got an apartment, you told the landlord that if she couldn't pay the rent, you'd back her up and pay it yourself. I'm wondering if things like that were ever embarrassing to you, to have Senator George McGovern being on the phone to the landlord saying, okay, if she's too drunk to pay the rent, I'll back it up.
It wasn't so much embarrassing to me as it was a case of being ambivalent about what was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Was I, as my daughters would sometimes tell me, enabling her to keep drinking by almost underwriting a middle-class lifestyle, even though she wasn't taking responsibility for her own life? That's a danger you have to be careful about. The people who, with experience in the Alcoholics Anonymous program, warn you against what they call enabling people to keep drinking. But that's a difficult line to draw. We eventually, I think, got to the point where we made clear to Terry that we weren't going to help finance her drinking, but we did not want her out on the street either. So I'm tormented by that decision. I have to tell you, though, that having lost Terry, I don't regret one act of kindness, one act of compassion, one gesture of generosity towards her. What I regret is that I couldn't have done more to convince her that she had the love and support of her family.
In your memoir about your daughter called Terry, you've published excerpts of her journals. And I'm wondering how you feel about having read them, if you felt at all like you were violating her privacy by reading them.
I struggled with that almost every day I was working on this book. I have to tell you that Eleanor, my wife, did not want me to write this book. She felt that it was an invasion of Terry's privacy, of her letters, of her journals, of her diaries. But now that she's seen the manuscript, she's glad that I wrote the book, and I am too. I have the feeling that if we had some way to communicate with Terry, she'd be pleased with this book. I'm an old history teacher. Terry had a sense of history. I'm convinced that at some level, when Terry wrote these frank confessions about what was going on in her life, she wanted them shared with other people. And I think this book can be helpful to other people.
There's a journal excerpt I'd like for you to read. It's on page 20, and it's something that she wrote in 1993.
Okay. She said, I arrived in Norfolk for Dad's Army Air Corps reunion. Our drive down from Washington was easy and enjoyable. He is much easier to be with than when he was in national politics. I was going to say he had no business being so self-centered and obsessed when he had dependent children. Then I thought, I've done the same thing with alcoholism. There is no difference. I will tell him sometime.
Did she ever tell you that?
She came pretty close to that. As you know from reading the book, I print some of the things that are critical about myself that Terry said. I think she had ambivalent feelings about my political career. She was very proud of the causes I championed in American politics, especially my efforts to end American involvement in the Vietnam War. But at the same time, she and I had a very special, close relationship, and she resented the intrusion of public affairs and the business of the Senate on my time with her.
There's another excerpt of your daughter's journal I'd like you to read for us. This is on page 129. And this is the part that begins, tonight was the first wounded child group.
Tonight was the first wounded child group. I didn't like it very much and have some anxiety about sharing too soon who Dad is. I feel ashamed that I was wanting so much to ensure that I would be noticed and taken seriously.
Oh, that must have been interesting for you to read her ambivalence about your fame, your notoriety.
Well, there's several poignant references in this book that are similar to that, where she says to people, I want you to know who my dad is. He's George McGovern, and he ran for president. She goes on about these things, and she says it is because she wanted to feel good about her own stature. She, in one place, says that she didn't want people to think she was a complete loser, so she told them who her father was. I find that very touching, but it's also kind of sad because Terry was a person who, in her own right, had every reason for self-respect. She was a person of high intelligence, a person of great compassion, with just a marvelous sense of humor. And yet this problem of declining self-esteem plagued her from the time she was a teenager.
And her failure to, you know, achieve anything, and her failure to, you know, totally give up alcohol must have seemed like an even greater failure measured up against your success.
I think that's right. I think that Terry knew that she had great opportunities in our family. She participated heavily in the 1972 presidential campaign. She was speaking on platforms all over this country, sometimes to audiences of thousands of people, and she did extremely well. And yet, with the passage of time, alcohol robbed her of the capacity to perform in that fashion, to hold a job, and to do other things that would have enhanced her self-confidence and her self-esteem.
In another journal entry, Terry wrote, "My mother often tried to help me when I went to her, but mostly I remember her wanting to change me, not being able to meet me where I was." You know, when I read that, I thought, what an impossible situation it is for parents to be in a situation like this, because if you don't try to change her when she's suffering from alcoholism, then you feel really bad that you're not doing your best to help her get well. And of course, if you do try to change her, then she could have the reaction she has here, that it's just hard to go to you for help, because all you do is be critical and try to change her.
Well, it was very painful for me to include that passage in the book. It's harder for me to include criticism of Eleanor than it is criticism of myself, because I think Eleanor was almost blameless as a mother. She was so dedicated to those five children of ours. It's one of the reasons that Eleanor decided not to work outside the home. She felt that with five children coming within a period of 10 years, she had a full-time obligation at home. And that was the attitude of most women in that post-World War II period. So she gave everything she had to Terry and to the other children, and I think that Terry knew that. Eleanor was her best friend, her most dependable advisor, the person who would always listen to her patiently in the middle of the night or any other time.
What was your wife's reaction when she read that journal excerpt?
Well, she was hurt by it. She had read the journals herself, as well as reading these passages in my book. And it does hurt her, because Eleanor has lived for these children. So for a mother to read criticism of that kind from one of her children is very painful.
Looking back now, do you think that you were too judgmental or not judgmental or enough? Is there anything that you would want to change in that?
Yes, there is. I wish I had always remembered that Terry was sick, that once she became seriously addicted, she had an illness that had to be treated as such. I wish that I had been more careful about separating my resentment of that disease from my love for her. My dad was an old-fashioned Methodist minister, and I remember him saying to the congregation several times, "Hate the sin, but love the sinner." I wish I had applied that doctrine to modify it to say, hate the alcoholism, but love the alcoholic, and make that clear to her.
Did you often feel like there were two different Terrys, the sober Terry and the drunk Terry?
I did feel that way, and one time I said to her shortly before she died, she was in a period of sobriety, and we were in Madison, Wisconsin, and having dinner, I was just struck that night by what a endearing person she was, so perceptive and sensitive and compassionate, and as usual, so funny and humorous. I said to her near the end of the evening, "You know, Terry, I don't think there's a more lovable creature on this earth than you when you're sober." And she said, "Well, thank you, Dad, but..." Then just with a touch of sadness, she said, "Maybe I'm a little bit lovable even when I'm not sober, even when I'm drinking." And I think that's true. We have to sustain that love for alcoholics even when their behavior is not very attractive.
My guest is former Senator George McGovern. His memoir about his daughter is called Terry, My Daughter's Life and Death Struggle with Alcoholism. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with George McGovern. He's written a memoir about his late daughter, Terry, who died of alcoholism at the age of 45. When you were in politics, did you feel like you had to pretend you had a perfect family? That seems to be a game that most politicians feel that they have to play.
Well, I suppose I was guilty of that. I always did think I had a great family. I still do. I think that one of the things I did with my family that I would do less of if I had it to do over again is, in a sense, kind of using them politically, asking them to get up on the back end of an open car with me or a truck or whatever was available and ride in parades. I think that I would be more cautious about that now. They went along with all of it, but I would spend more time also talking to my family about decisions like that and getting their input rather than just assuming that I could always ask them to bend their will to mine when it came to politics.
I want to get back to a question we were talking about before, which is, you know, when there is an alcoholic in your family, how do you know if what you're doing is functioning as an enabler, or if, you know, if your criticism is sending them further into alcoholism? And there's a specific incident I'd like you to talk about. There was one day when your daughter said that she desperately needed a drink, and you tried to prevent her from going out to get one. And then she wrote in her journal, "Dad, why don't you just?" Actually, was this in the journal that you said?
No, she said that to me.
She said this to you. Tell me what she said.
She said, "Dad, I just have to have another drink. Every cell in my body is just screaming out in agony for it. You have no idea the misery that I feel." And I could see it on her face, just genuine anguish. She said, "Please, please, please, let me have a drink. Why don't you sit down here with me and have a drink?" This is about 1 o'clock in the morning. There was no alcohol in the house. The bars were closed. We were living on a hill in Washington that was absolutely covered with ice. This is the middle of the winter, and that steep hill was just covered with about an inch of ice. If she had started down that hill in the car, she never would have made it. There was a big ravine at the bottom of the hill. So after turning her down on these pleas for another glass of vodka, I heard a noise out in front of the house a few minutes later, and sure enough, it was Terry out in a car in front of the house getting ready to take off. I raced out of the house, pulled the door open, and begged her to get out of the car. When she refused to do that, I literally struggled with her physically for 5 or 6 minutes trying to pull her out of that car. I'm a very strong person, I think. She was a small, somewhat delicate person. I eventually was able to break her grip on the steering wheel. What I didn't know is that she had moved the car out of the parking gear and had the motor running. It was a new car, and I didn't hear the motor running, so it lurched down the hill and crashed into the house next door. But the point of that story is that it demonstrates how desperate that addiction to alcohol can become.
But I also think it shows how topsy-turvy all of a family member's behavior is, and how topsy-turvy it could be interpreted. I mean, in some ways, gosh, maybe you would have been better off just having a drink with her. She wouldn't have gone out of the house. She wouldn't have risked her life. The car wouldn't have crashed. I mean, I'm not really saying, oh, don't you regret that you didn't have a drink with her? But I mean, there was no good path of behavior here.
I suppose if I had that circumstance confronting me again, exactly as it was, I would have tried to get her another drink and urge her to quiet down and go to sleep. I certainly would have been troubled by it. You hate to give alcohol to somebody who's dying from alcoholism, and that was the course that Terry was flirting with at that time. But under the circumstances, one doesn't know what to do. I've had people that know about this story advise me both ways on what would have been the proper course.
I wonder what it's like for you now to be talking about your daughter and her problems and its emotional impact on you, and to have written this book. I think for most politicians, they spend so much of their lives having to not reveal things about their personal life and not reveal things about the family, because it could be held against them.
Well, I had to write this book. I had to do it just to come to terms with my own anguish over Terry's death. I could not accept the fact that her story was going to end in a snowbank in Madison, Wisconsin at Christmas time, 94. I had to tell the story of this remarkable young woman, and she was remarkable, a person who filled her life with compassionate acts and kindnesses to other people, a very remarkable young woman. but who also, through her own mistakes and her own addiction, has something tragic that we need to understand, too. I wanted that whole story to be told as honestly as I could tell it, to base it in every way I could on her own journals and her own history, and to share that with other people.
I have one last question. If you were in politics today, do you think more would have been made of your daughter's bouts with alcoholism, the fact that she had had an abortion when she was 15, that she had two children with a man she lived with but wasn't married to? Now that family values is such a big issue in campaigns and everybody's always competing with who has the more perfect family, and the public wants to know more and more about the private lives of politicians.
Well, those aspects of Terry's life were embarrassing. But I think the public is mature enough to draw a distinction between the mistakes and the weaknesses of our children and the strength of the candidate. So I doubt if that would have spilled over in a way that would have been seriously damaging to me. Terry was also a great asset to me politically. She went out and campaigned all over this country for me in 72, and she did the same thing in state races in South Dakota. I would put it to you this way. On balance, I would take Terry McGovern as an ally anytime, despite the difficulties that she had.
George McGovern, I really want to thank you for talking with us, and I'm really sorry about your loss.
Thank you so much for having me on.
George McGovern's memoir about his daughter, Terry, has just been published in paperback. Our interview was recorded last June when the book was first published. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.